Chapter 23. The wall-mounted radio popped with the receipt of a signal, followed by the caller's voice. The blowing wind created a background static that muffled the gravelly voice, though the proximity of the transmission made for a strong signal. "We have them surrounded behind the sanctuary. They arrived with the Chinese delegation as Mongolian state security escorts, but are apparently imposters. My guards who were locked in the test chamber claim they are not Chinese, but appear Russian." "I see," Borjin replied, speaking into the handset in an irritated voice. "Government agents, or more likely, spies from a Russian oil company. See that they don't leave the compound alive, but hold the gunfire until the delegation has departed. I will expect a full report from security as to why they were not monitored at their arrival." Borjin replaced the handset, then closed a cherry wood cabinet that concealed the two-way radio transmitter. Exiting the small anteroom, he walked down the hall and returned to the formal conference room. The Chinese minister stood at the window staring into the dust storm outside with his own sense of swirling obfuscation. "Excuse the interruption," Borjin said, taking a seat with a grim smile. "A slight mishap has occurred with two of your state escorts. I'm afraid they won't be able to join you on your return trip. I will, of course, provide replacement escorts if you desire." Shinja nodded vaguely. "The gunshots we are hearing from the outside?" he asked. "A training exercise by my security guards. No reason to be alarmed." The minister stared blankly out the window, his mind clearly elsewhere. As if slowed by age, he sluggishly turned and sat down across from Borjin. "Your offer is akin to blackmail, and your demands are preposterous," he said, his anger finally surfacing. "My demands are non-negotiable. And perhaps they are not so preposterous for a country facing an economic meltdown," Borjin hissed. Shinja stared at his host with contempt. He had disliked the arrogant and demanding magnate from the moment they met. Though perfunctorily gracious, he obviously had no respect at all for China or its leadership position in the world. It pained Shinji even to attempt to negotiate, but he knew the state leaders, and the president in particular, were expecting a deal for the oil. With reason, he feared his country's leadership would accept the abominable proposal out of desperation. If only there was another way. "Minister Shinji, you must view it as a mutually beneficial transaction," Borjin continued, regaining his composure. "China gets the oil it needs to keep its economy running. I get a long-term commitment as a major supplier, and the Mongolian Autonomous Republic rejoins its rightful place as part of Greater Mongolia. Acceding sovereign territory is not an act taken lightly." "There is nothing of significance that China must accede. We both know the region is little more than a rural dust bowl that is largely occupied by Mongol herders. My interest in reunifying the region is born of a cultural desire to restore the lands that once belonged to our nation. You may be correct that the region represents little of value. Still, it is most unusual for a private entity to be interfering in territorial exchanges." "This is true. In fact, my government knows nothing of our accord. They will find it a quite pleasing political gift, one that will be most favored by the masses. And you will benefit handsomely, no doubt." "As a broker, I have assigned a portion of the land rights to my company, but it represents only a small percentage of the total." He smiled devilishly. He handed a thick leather binder to Shinja. I have already worked up the necessary agreements for state representatives of both countries to sign. It would please me to receive acknowledgement of your country's acceptance at the earliest opportunity. I will be reporting to the General Secretary's Council tomorrow afternoon. A decision will be forthcoming. Your fixed position on the terms may negate an agreement, I must warn. So be it. Those are my terms. Borjin rose to his feet. I look forward to a long and fruitful relationship, Minister Shinja. Borjin bowed graciously, if insincerely. Shinja rose and bowed stiffly in return, then left the room with his entourage. Borjin and Tatiana followed the Chinese delegation to the door and watched as they staggered through the howling dust storm to their cars. As the taillights blinked past the guard gate, Borjin closed the door and turned to Tatiana. The plum is ours for the taking, he said, walking back down the corridor. Yes, but the risks are many. They will not find it easy to give up the lands of Inner Mongolia. Perhaps they will begin to suspect something. Nonsense. The Chinese can appreciate the cultural desire of Mongolia to seek unification with its prior territory. A perfect cover story. And a rich irony that they will give us the lands that we will in turn exploit to sell them oil. They will not be happy once they learn the truth. They might nullify the agreement, or worse. And they won't want to pay prices above the market rate. The latter point is a simple matter. With our newfound technology, we can keep the entire market unstable for years and profit richly. We have already proven that in the Persian Gulf and will do so again. They reached the conference room and stepped inside, moving to the small bar that was surrounded by dozens of shelved liquor bottles. Borjin reached for a bottle of cognac and poured two glasses. My dear sister, we have already won. Once the oil starts flowing, we will have the Chinese by the throat, and they dare not renege. Should they have a change of heart, we simply accelerate the pipeline to Siberia and link up with the connection to Nakhodka. Then we will be able to sell our oil to Japan and the rest of the world and laugh in their face. Yes. Thanks to our brother's fire ship incident at Ningbo, the Chinese are in a desperate bind. Temujie has been working miracles, hasn't he? I need not remind you that he nearly caused my death in Baikal, she said irritably. An unforeseen side effect, the large wave. But no matter. You are here, safe now, he said with a slightly patronizing tone. You must admit, he has been most effective. Coordinating the pipeline destruction in Siberia, then setting fire to the Chinese port when a suitable fault line could not be found. And the Persian Gulf team he assembled has been most effective. After the next demonstration in the Middle East, the Chinese will be crawling to us on their knees. And Temujie is proceeding across the Pacific to North America for the final strike. They are already at sea. The Baikal equipment arrived in Seoul 2 days ago, and they departed shortly thereafter. I sent the Kenti excavation team with Temujie, since we had to cease operations after the incident with the Russian survey team. Their search efforts have produced nothing anyway. It is apparent from the empty crypt we found near Genghis that the other tomb was ransacked or else never interred. It is a mystery why the associated riches have never come to light. No matter. as the Chinese will soon provide us a healthy cash flow. We'll have to wait a week or two for the next oil shock, he said and smiled. Then they will be agreeably inclined. Stepping out of the conference room, he walked to the adjacent staircase, his sister following close behind. Stopping at the head of the stairs, he raised his glass to the huge portrait of the ancient Mongol warrior that hung on the facing wall. The first step is complete. We are well on our way now to restoring the riches and glory of the Golden Clan. Our father would be proud, Tatiana said. He has made it possible. To father and to our lord, Chinggis, he said, swallowing a gulp of the cognac. May the conquests begin again.